Hey folks, we're back. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans.
All right. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, Carnival Edition. We're so excited to have a very special guest in the house. Rich VK.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Rich, what's a proper way to say your last name?
Von Kaiserly.
Von Kaiserly.
I usually say Smith. Just like when someone's reading my ID, which I love when I go to vote. There's old black women that sit in District 7, yeah. You know, 12th Ward, and they're like, mm-hmm. they have to write out my name, and I have two middle names, so they're like, oh, Lord, you know, and then they start, you know, carrying over to the second... the second, you know, thing, they start uh-huh. laughing at me and they joke about running out of ink. And so, yeah.
That is so, I wonder how many hours in your life you've spent about your name.
Every time.
Because we're adding a few more minutes right now.
Yeah. No, it's great.
How does this Smith? You're just making up this.
No, that's totally true. And I also live on Constantinople Street. So you imagine my return address being mm-hmm. a little bit of a hand cramp.
Exactly. So when you're on the phone with like an Amazon person trying to get them to send you something, that's tough. Or
yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, thank God for the digital age.
Exactly.
But Joel, that's the reason why you don't vote early and go to your precinct right there.
Right.
That's it. You get that experience.
Because, see, yeah, Jeff and I argued about whether or not, you know, the nice experience of voting on the Tuesday. I went the Saturday before. But I got that experience.
You did?
Well, they look at my ID and they'd be like, Arizona. So I haven't changed my driver's license since.
We heard about this voter fraud.
25 years. Yeah, because it expires when I'm 65. So yeah. the original license was good for 33 years. So I got some time. But they're like,
God, how is that license going to play in the Donald Trump era?
It's not going to play well.
Like Homeland Security, whatever Gestapo force is like being assembled right now is going to look at that and just be like, this is illegitimate.
Exactly. They're listening to this right now.
They're going to toss it in the trash, and you're going to get deported to Mexico.
And then you're like, that's fine. The
bus is idling outside.
Right.
Free trip to Mexico? And they probably got some sort of assistance for us over there that are getting deported.
Not bad.
I bet they got some assistance.
Reverse deported. There you go. Free trip.
God, that would be pretty nice. Dude, I spoke. We're going to get
your U.S. citizenship has been revoked.
I talked to this dude today who I'm doing a little work with. He and his lady just went to Mexico for the flight, four hotel nights, for $1,200 for two of them. Not $1,200 each, $1,200 for both of them. And then they went fishing and stuff on boats.
I know.
I want to get deported, man. That's all I'm saying.
If it was possible for a United States citizen to get deported, and they just looked at your heritage, and they were like, hey, you know, you've got a substantial amount of Italian in you, we're sending you to Italy.
Exactly.
I mean, like, that's great.
Yeah, I'll get sent to Scotland.
Right.
Fucking man.
I'm like, oh my God, you're either going to Italy or France.
You just wait it out 4 years and, you know.
And just come back.
Just come back, yeah.
So Rich VK in the house. So carnival time. Where do we want to start, guys?
Wait, can I get back to your last name real
sure.
quick?
Sure, oh, yes. Yeah. German.
Okay, it's German.
Right.
It's not Dutch.
No, yeah, Eastern German, family was there long ago, left. This is all my father's side, obviously, but during the period where Russia kind of rolled out over all of, you know, Eastern Europe, they became more or less Russian, you know, and were aristocrats, hence the long name with a separate little, you know, preamble to it.
Right.
And then fled during the Russian Revolution. And my grandfather got in on the U.S. quota and his brother got in on the Canadian quota. So I got a bunch of folks in Canada. But that's the quick version.
That is a novel.
Wait, right. Yeah, how did your family end up in the United States?
Actually, a relative did write a family history in a, you know, self-published book.
Wow.
Which is kind of cool.
Do you have it?
I do. Wow. I do. That's pretty cool. I read it.
God, that's awesome. So, when did your family get to the United States?
I believe it for my I'm not. I couldn't give you an exact date. I'm guessing that it was in the. I've got to say, like, early 1900s.
Yeah.
So
those are what, your great grandparents?
No, these are my grandparents. But my parents are born in the 40s. So I'm just assuming that they would be. Yeah, I don't have an exact date.
Oh no,
So you're a portion of your family arrived in the United States because the United States was willing to accept refugees from a war-torn place in the world in an exotic locale that may or may not have had political leanings that weren't in agreement with the United States, and you turned out to be a productive American citizen. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, more or less.
It's kablam.
Yeah.
It's interesting how that process works over the course of several generations.
Even the first generation was productive. So, it didn't even take time. But
I read a story in the New York Times today about some Syrian refugees who've been in Brooklyn for 2 months, and they're still waiting for part of their family to be able to join them, and they've already started a successful online pastry store.
Oh yeah, sure.
They're just crushing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Just making baklava.
It's a horrible idea. All these refugees and immigrants, man. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Make some of the best pastries on earth for us.
You know who has
for everyone?
Who has every impetus to be on welfare? Immigrants who come to the United States. They have nothing to do with their time. They have no motivation whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. I mean. I don't know if you guys want to dive into the political deep end, totally. Yeah.
This is the carnival episode.
But look, I mean, everything is informed. I will just say this. I think everything, Super Bowl ads, whatever it is, carnival, everything is informed by the
current political. It's completely saturated. Like, I'm listening to, even, podcasts I listen to that are normally like, hey, this is we're going to review a book that's on the New York Times bestsellers now gone to, let's talk about Trump for the next... Even the most extraneous stuff, content outlets are now just all sucked up with, politics.
Yeah, so it's not like we're going to go on a diatribe every episode about Donald Trump specifically, but when you sit here and talk about someone's origin story, it's kind of interesting to point out the fact that this is how America works. Rich's story right here. And when we get into our favorite carnival parades, I'm sure we're going to get into talking about, just teasing this, we're going to get to different locations in different parts of the city. They're going to have different types of folks there that are also going to stir up some of the political sort of, I don't know, messiness, for lack of a better word, dispiritedness that I tend to feel. But anyway, I'm jumping out of myself at the moment.
Or not.
I want to, what about Rich, just getting back to just bring it all the way home for you. Your folks landed in New York? Grandparents and then parents?
They were in, I believe, so my grandfather moved around quite a bit. I think he lived in 20 some odd different places around the U.S. My father was born in Massachusetts. He did eventually settle in and around New York for a large part of his career. I grew up in Connecticut in the suburbs of New York City.
Yep.
My mom's side of the family is all New Yorkers. I'm the typical first suburban born child, from the whole line of New Yorkers from that side.
Wow.
And, so that's pretty much the.
Yeah. And you've been down in New Orleans for how long?
Moved here at the end of 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. One of the reasons that I wanted to have Rich on is because I think it's good to get different perspectives from people who grew up here, who just moved here, who, the whole nine yards, because the city is made up of so many different types of folks. But also, Rich, because you strike me as someone who is particularly into carnival, you really seem to enjoy it. And so just want to, that's one of the, we're going to have Ivan on too at some point.
I'm not Ivan level. Ivan who's walking out to Metairie to catch parades or
Totally. I just hung out with Ivan a little bit earlier and he said, of course.
What is that about? Walking out to Metairie?
Exaggerating, but he if you ever been next to him on a parade route, it's ridiculous. He is all but ripping beads out of kids' hands and just on tilt.
Yeah. He's that guy.
After I saw you today, Jeff, I stopped by Ivan's house because it's right up the street.
Ivan, I love you, by the way, if you're
listening. And we were talking. It was just going to be a quick visit. And he said, hey, man, I've been thinking ever since Saturday night about your comments about my behavior on the parade route. I'm like, dude, I was just fucking with you, man, because of the behavior that you just mentioned, Rich.
Yeah.
But we're going to have Ivan on now because he's like, I wasn't fucking with him. He was asking me why I wasn't getting up there. And I'm like, I'm a full 8 inches taller than you, dude. I can't get in front of all these people.
Exactly. I'm with you. I'm the same, you know, just for everyone listening, I'm about the same height as Joel, give or take. And so I live uptown, so I'm on a predominantly family stretch of the uptown parade routes. So there's ladders and kids, street side. But I like carnival too. I like going out there. I like getting throws. So I hang back. I go for the long throws, which is why they build the second level of the floats, you know, for 6'2" dudes who can be like, you know,
in the back,
10 yards back and just be like, you know, hit me. And then those guys, you know, absolutely love to flex their accuracy and distance.
Exactly.
Right. They get their little Drew Brees
There's
thing.
Two or three dudes on each float that wants to test their armor.
Yeah.
They need to with a whole pack of beads, like they're throwing a football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they get
that's a good strategy.
They
man.
Get
it's
excited,
strategy,
so they'll give you a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of a little more fun because there's a little more challenge. But
so I'll say it today. I was like, Ivan, was this bothering you during the Herlin Riley show? I mean, you've been thinking about this since my little comments to you. Who knew Ivan was so sensitive? He's a sensitive cat.
He's full tilt. Yeah, he's a maniac. I love him. He's funny as hell. I'm kidding. I mean, he's not doing anything wrong. He's just like insanely excited and into it. Yeah.
And look, he doesn't just use physicality, folks, because he explained this to me today at length. He uses charm and wit, and he makes eye contact, and he says funny things. He just doesn't say, give me.
He can cry on demand. So, you know, in case
he can
totally
cry on demand. Yeah. So, anyway.
I think, a while back, wasn't I telling you, bring the fake baby to the route? Put the you know, because they have very realistic looking babies now.
Oh yeah, yes.
And that's right. I mean, if you want to clean up, just
get the fake baby on your shoulders.
You're good,
dude. That
well,
a stroke of genius.
Well, and Rich, I tried to implement that very year that you came up with it, and I went out to Metairie to check out all the retail stores. Because folks, great thing about New Orleans, like by and large, you have to go to the suburbs to go to a. I mean, it used to be Home Depot, but not. But whatever, to go to a Target, to go to a place where they might have some shit, Toys R Us. So I went all way out on Veterans Boulevard, checked all the stores, and I could only find this little like handheld baby that was about as big as right out the womb.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But the face was formed like a 1-year-old, right? And I just held it, and I think it was like tanned black. And I took it to Zulu Parade, which is the.
and then it took a turn for the worse.
I was creepy, dude, holding up this little black baby in one hand, trying to implement or execute Rich's vision. It didn't take.
Took a turn for the worse.
I think that we should videotape. We should get the super realistic baby and have somebody do heinous acts out on the parade route with the super realistic baby.
And
get the reactions of the people on the floats
and
the people around, right?
That'd be so great.
Because people will get a glance of it, and they'll be like, what? And so there's a giant pack of beads is coming down toward the baby. Use the baby as a human shield.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Get it established that it's a real baby, and you're like really into the baby, and then go nutty for some beads and drop it on the ground.
Exactly.
You know, keep doing that.
Or like, it'd be kind of like a Smigel bit, you know? You cut to another bit where you're like, the baby's up on your shoulders and you didn't get the beads and you're just like, fuck you, motherfucker! And you throw your beer down and just see how people react.
I find that stuff
see if
hilarious.
Child services are being
not
called right away.
Does,
see if people are going to talk to a cop on the horse at the corner.
Right.
Right? And the cop has to come over. And say something that would be great.
You have the baby like this swaddled, you know,
and
you have it in one arm like this, right?
You got to do that for
but
like 20 minutes
like,
to keep it established.
You have your daiquiri in the same.
You have
swaddle.
A beer or a daiquiri in your other hand, right there, and then you take the beer and you stick it in the swaddle with the baby so that you can catch the bees.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Oh, hold that, kid.
A bottle of liquor. And
you know what's going to
happen. A bottle of hard liquor.
Jack Daniels.
What's going to be the It's going to be the real shocker is you're going to do that and no one's going to care. And then it's going to be switched on you.
That's going to be a fun video too. That's the reason we do like six different segments. One where no one cares, one where the cop gets called, the whole nine yards.
Somebody just rolls up and says, yeah, getting started early, huh? All right.
Yeah. Or they're like, hey, can you hold mine for a minute? I'll be back.
And you do this thing and someone, when you see that someone's looking at you, you don't make eye contact, but you put a little of the Jack Daniels on your fingers. And then you just stick your fingers in the baby as if you're putting a little between the cheek
good.
And gum.
Yeah. It's good for them. It's good for them.
Exactly. We're just trying to make them sleep.
Right.
During the parade.
Light up the big spliff. You pass it around.
Exactly.
You get the thing of snuff, the Kodiak snuff, you know. Just put it in the baby's
mouth. I love that stuff. That I remember an old Man Show. It was like an old Adam Carolla, Jimmy Kimmel show. I didn't watch it a ton, but I remember a bit they did where I still remember where Adam Carolla they dressed up as airline pilots and they went to like JFK and they just sat in a terminal bar and pounded drinks for like an hour and then we're like, you know, oh man, you know, got up really quick.
Time to go. Yeah. That's great.
Oh, that's great. That was an ingenious idea by you. We should try and do that, dude.
Yeah. You got to get those lifelike babies, though, right? They're probably...
Where do you get the life? They're probably expensive. Probably $500.
Yeah. I'm sure...
Tweet at us if you know any about this. Good Life Babe on Twitter.
Some of the movie people around probably have a good idea.
Oh, yeah, Jillian would know. Let's hit up Jillian.
Yeah. Jillian might know. Yeah, there's some movie people we can get in touch with.
So we just had the first official weekend of Carnival, even though Carnival officially... Well, the parade started rolling this last weekend. So we were all out at Crew de Vue. Jeff, you marched in with your band, Crew de Vue.
Our sponsor.
Right.
Egg Yolk Jubilee.
It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff Jill Self from New Orleans. Sponsor.
By Egg Yolk Jubilee.
Out there.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it. So we've been doing that we've probably been with that crew for 8 years now. Crew of Underwear. You know, so if you don't know, this is another thing we do on the show all the time. We're like, folks, if you don't know, you know,
yeah.
A lot of people know already what Crew de Vue is if you're listening to this. But I'll just explain it that it's an umbrella organization made up of these so-called sub-crews that they all have names themselves. And they're kind of loose-knit. Social organizations in and of themselves that have, you know, minor fundraising drives and parties a couple, two, three, four times a year or something like that, get together. One of them I know is like an offshoot of a mid-city group called Crew of Palmyra, which is like, you know, there's a vast and disparate number of lesser known social marching clubs in New Orleans of a variety of different ethnicities, white, black, everything in between, integrated,
old, young,
all like
thin, not so thin.
Exactly.
You learn about a couple of new ones every year.
They get West Bank, East Bank, Slidell, wherever the case may be, you know, it's like they all exist somewhere. Some of them are tend toward a Masonic type feel, you know, where they have a lodge, you know, they got it together at some point in 1956 at the peak of the membership drive and put enough money down to like get that warehouse, you know, so that the guys could get together and get loaded and legitimize it, you know. And so like, for instance, yesterday we marched with one of those older groups uptown called the Lions Club, LYONS, which is the name of a street uptown. And they've been around since, I think, 1948. It's a post-World War II club. And somehow they're not affiliated, or they're friends with, I guess, the Jefferson City Buzzards, right? the Jefferson City Buzzards have been around since 1898, and they have a clubhouse.
Yeah, it's like on Constance.
Yeah, exactly. So if you pay attention close enough around town, you see like there's another house that I think is on Jefferson that has like the Jefferson City Buzzards emblem on the side of the house.
Yeah, because
it's some, you know, it's like that's their thing.
Sure.
So you get into this is kind of old school thing. Things get deep really quickly. They get super neighborhood oriented and with a kind of a thread of heritage that goes back, that goes way back, that predates all of us, you know, and what we know New Orleans to be now.
Yeah.
And Crew de Vue is, these sub crews are somewhat of a natural extension of that tradition. I think of them as kind of that, except it's way more postmodern, you know, and it's satirical. And this year it was off the hook in terms of like they make these floats that
the people don't ride them necessarily.
Right. They're typically mule drawn floats, except like one group always turns the table on the societal order. There's one group that has four guys in business suits that's like that are pulling the float.
I saw that. Yeah.
Right. And every year they have that.
Right.
Right. Instead of a mule. Right. So the mule is like these business people, you know, but they're faux business. They're not, you know, everyone is in a costume, except for the bands. And so we as a band, we dress in the traditional black and whites, you know, so it's a black pair of slacks and a white collared shirt typically. And we set out from there, and these floats, which some of them have riders, like they had one that had women dancing, you know, it was like a strip club kind of theme going on. Right. Exactly. And they can be, you know, to varying degrees of wildness, really sexually inappropriate, you know. It is not
subverse. It's satirical and subverse.
Satirical, referred to as an X-rated parade.
Subversive, X-rated adult parade.
Exactly.
For sure. Like,
it's not a family parade.
If you're a cool parent, you know, you might bring your kid to this, you know, if you know that they can handle it.
And if you know how to communicate to your kids.
If you live in the Trump
about
bubble.
Questions they might have.
If you live in the Trump bubble, you're going to have a real hard time with this parade.
Yeah.
But you're a dandelion.
If you bring your kid to like a natural history museum, they're going to see cave paintings with about the same thing.
Well, exactly. And those same dandelions won't go there.
Exactly.
That's
our name for, by the way, you know, we came up. That's our anti-snowflake, opposite snowflake name for Republicans who can't take anything.
Who get butt hurt.
Yeah.
Because they can't stand anything like what we're talking about right now.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And look, there was a lot of that on the parade. There was a lot of that along the parade route, man, because I unfortunately ended up in the French Quarter for the Crew de Vue. And there were, I started asking people around me, you know, what their deal was, just friendly conversation. Apparently there were a couple conferences in town. Like one was an education thing, maybe the other one was like an agricultural thing or whatever.
There's an anthropology one.
So you have like 30 or 40,000 people in town who have no idea what they're fucking getting into. And there are a lot of fucking Trump people out there who assume that it's going to be like, they're going to see, you know, show your flashing for beads because that's what they think carnival is. And I saw so many confused, not even disgusted, but like these dandelion faces, these old dudes, these old fucking ass puckered, ass hurt white guys who had no idea what they were looking at. 75% of the floats, I think, were somehow Trump related, you know, because it's a lot of political satire.
I would say so.
And all of the people, they range in from age to body type to ethnicity to everything, yet everyone's wearing tawdry outfits. Everyone's baring skin or adding penises or ass parts or tit parts.
Giant balls.
Giant balls, whatever it is. So you're showing everything.
A whole group of vaginas.
Adding appendages. They had a whole group of vaginas.
Sticking a box. Sticking a pizza box.
Yeah, exactly.
So these people just have no idea what to make of it. I mean, I was almost like vibed out in a negative way just for how like not even disturbed they were, just confused. You know, like someone who just doesn't understand that this is a world or a reality. It's like put Clockwork Orange in front of them or something. Maybe the same thing. I don't know. But like they just... It was really fucking weird. You
and,
know?
And there was a Clockwork Orange theme float.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. In the parade. I had no idea. Right. It was like one of the ones that everybody was like, wow, that's it's fucking genius. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
And all the anthropology people that were in town, like 16 new dissertations got started when they saw it. They were like, this is fucking fascinating. You know what I'm doing my next paper on?
Exactly. Going to spend some time in New Orleans.
Exactly. Right. With the dick parade.
the dick vagina parade.
Exactly. So that's Crew de Vue. And so it's the only parade, too, that normally in the bigger Mardi Gras parades, interspersed between the floats are high school marching bands and or these kind of like dance groups, you know, that have this like really loud DJ music pumping and stuff like that. Or at the beginning of the parade, you've got the Shriners, right? And they got the dune buggy, the loud dune buggies and stuff. And they throw out like one hubba bubba bubble gum at a time, you know, they're really angry,
right?
You know, sour looking people.
Right. Yeah.
And they're just like tossing out like one little bubble gum.
Right.
As a kid, that was always the most frightening part of the parade.
Right.
Just like, God, these people are scary, man. They frighten me.
Scary people give me out gum.
Yeah. Like, I don't really want this, man.
Yeah.
But the difference is in Crew de Vue is that it's all brass bands that are in between the different crews. And each crew hires, they select the band that they want to be with.
Right.
And then, you know, to our great pleasure and honor, that this crew of underwear, everybody has a name like that. Crew of underwear, crew of chaos, crew of spank, crew of sperm.
Crew of spank, the cousin of those two.
Drips and discharges.
Drips and discharges, right. Exactly.
We should start Screw of Spank Bank if there's not one.
Yeah, yeah. We could have our first float could be Doppelbait.
Exactly. It's goodlifebabe.com. Go to the glossary section. You'll see what Doppelbait is. Crew is one of my top five at least parades. What are y'all's favorite parades over Carnival?
I mean, I would say it would have been at or near the number one for me, but I mean, having marched in it for so many years, I don't really get to see it. I mean, I don't get to see it at all anymore. I'm in it,
yeah,
you know, so
it's totally different.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing. So if I'm going to select from the other parades, like I have a real affinity for this parade, Crew of Mid-City.
Yeah.
And not just for the idea that that I've lived most of my time in living in the city in and around the kind of the mid-city area, except for a couple of little moments. But because that parade has this idiosyncratic thing about it that makes it kind of special. One is that they bill themselves as the Battle of the Bands parade. So in this this one shining moment, because that parade rolls on the same day as Okeanos, Toth, and Mid-City, and then Bacchus, right? All on the Sunday before Mardi Gras, you have that. I think there's even one other parade tossed in the mix there. No, I don't think so. I think that's it. And Mid-City is, it's either that day or it's Saturday. It might be on Saturday.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. But anyway, their thing was Battle of the Bands. And it used to parade in Mid-City. It was great. And it was the only time that the bands, they went like 10 abreast instead of 8, you know? The full length of the street, you know, maximum power.
Yeah.
And And it was great. And they also have this weird thing where like all of their floats are made out of tinfoil, right? So they have this tinfoil thing that they do that no other parade does. And so the visual aspect of that parade is completely different than any other parade in Mardi Gras. And they have the Battle of the Bands thing. And so for me, I'm like, that's kind of like just the Battle of the Bands thing in and of itself just kind of makes it an A-list parade.
That sounds great. Now, do they do the bands ever, do the bands actually battle?
They don't. They just call it that. And then, but they have a judging.
But they're all rolling. All the best bands are rolling.
Yeah. And it is Sunday this year. So, it's Sunday.
That is one of my, just as a little brief sidetrack, one of my favorite things is when you do actually come across a Battle of the Bands, like happens sometimes on the corner of Napoleon and Magazine. There's a park on the uptown side, and that's also where there's frequently lineups. And you know, in a parade lineup, you know those, everyone in the parade has to be there at least like an hour, if not more, in advance. So there's a lot of wait time, and I've seen some really great, you know, showdowns where there's the full bands like that take over that park and then just go at each other
while they're waiting.
Yeah,
while they're waiting.
Right. Like there's no parade. It's just that happening. It's really
damn. That's great. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's really
the awesome. Whole lineup thing has its own pageantry.
That's a short 3-minute doc right there.
I know, right? Exactly. Just everybody getting together and getting off the school buses and everything, and the angry Shriner guys, you know, that are in there, and they're like, "Oh my God, a black person's within 5 feet of me," you know. Gun it! And they're out of there. Get me to the front of the parade. Shelter me. And the weird proto KKK guys, you know, that are on horseback, right?
Yeah, no,
that have
the
good doubloons.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah.
I always feel a little guilty because, like, that's my thing, trying to get the doubloon. Folks, I'm on a one-man quest. I'm hoping that my compadres here will join me on this quest to bring back the doubloon. The doubloon is the signature throw of Mardi Gras. It was for a long time, and it got displaced somewhat by the cup. But then but it's been a variety of other things like gigantic beads and this and that, you know. And so the humble doubloon, which is the lasting emblem of to carry the memory of that parade into history.
Sure.
Is the thing, like as it
which makes sense. It's a coin.
And
it's
a coin. I know it's special.
It's made out of metal, you know.
You ever every once in a while you go into like a thrift store and you'll see binders full of of doubloons from every single year that someone's painstakingly collected and organized and kept, and then eventually for whatever reason
that person passed and no one cared about it at the estate sale.
Well, see if you grew up here, that was you had a grandpa who had that.
Exactly.
You know, no matter what, you know, like somebody had one of those. And I'm like who made the
I'm
little
joining your they, doubloon crew.
Yeah, we
got
to get. Dude, I have a whole thing of doubloons back here that I've caught, man. You know, so that when I'm 80, I'll just be like, here's
I'm just
going to
get doubloons for you. I'm just going to ask for doubloons because I don't like them beads anyway.
I know. The doubloons is it's where it's at, you know. It's the most special throw because now it's become like the most rare thing. And in a heartbreaking sense, even at some of the parades, you know, you have to go on to like Arthur Hardy's Guide to Mardi Gras. And you can see a very specific listing of the throws that they have. Some parades have abandoned the and shame on you.
Shame
on you for this. They've abandoned the balloons altogether. This is no good.
We still have to be a shaming culture.
Yeah.
Just because we're snowflakes and beta males doesn't mean we can't shame you for not fucking throwing doubloons. You fucking asshole dandelions.
Dandelions. So, but typically, the, you know, proto-KKK looking dudes on horseback, right?
Yeah.
Because, folks, they have these guys that they're dressed up. They are all white guys. And they have these masks on, and they look kind of KKK.
Well, so, how's that juxtaposed by the slave-looking dudes at the back? What do you call them? The flambeaux?
That are holding the...
Go for that, please.
I want to finish my thought right? The finish to round it all up is that... To get the most special, to me, throw in any parade, you got to go to the creepiest dude.
You got to go to the KKK.
You got to go to the KKK looking guy.
Right.
Because those are the quote unquote captains. All those dudes are all in the ascendant line to become king, and they have to ride on horseback, and they're typically really sour individuals like the Shriner guys too, except that they, if you get them at the right point, they're the ones that have the special commemorative doubloon, right? Which is usually like a black anodized doubloon.
Right.
And no one else in the rest of the crew, or typically very few other people are even allowed to have them.
Maybe one person, maybe one person on each float.
I assume
Who's in charge of the float. Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
I assume that like everyone who listens to this, nine times out of 10 who's listening, knows, has been to Mardi Gras, knows about it, lives here, but it's worth saying that there's all sorts of coveted, special, secret throws that are way beyond the, you know, Zulu coconut and Muse's shoe that people see. But like Jeff's just talking about with the secret doubloon, you know, the Proteus pin,
the glass beads.
The glass beads, which
right.
But even there's Zulu bobbleheads I've seen that get hand, like it's like this infinite hierarchy of, you know, more and more special rare throws.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably 20% of which I don't even know about. You know, because
sure.
It is kind of interesting that it's evolved over the years into all this weird stuff.
There's probably totally. Some double secret shit out there.
There are commemorative things that are made for people who are in the crews that are only, you know, like the guys in Lions had some stuff made up, you know, and it's like, it looks like an award that you might get, you know, for... You know, the Red Baron might have gotten, shooting down a plane in World War One.
That they bought.
You know, yeah, right. And they bought it and then they put it around them. You know, and that's a special thing. And they get it made up. And only the presidents and the past presidents and whatnot and the special officers, and, you know, which means you're getting old, is, you know, those guys get it, that stuff. I'll tell you a little story. Hold on to that thought real quick. And, like a couple years ago, man, I was really crestfallen because I'm over there. I was by the Tivoli Circle and Tivoli Square, also known as Lee Circle. And so I was there.
I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Exactly. And this float stopped in front of us, in front of the Circle Bar. And I'm like, doubloon, man, come on. I need one doubloon. Just one from the parade. I know you got them because it's it. The guy looked down. He's like, why the fuck you want a doubloon, man? Like that. And I was like, God damn, man. So lame.
Crack a fucking smile, asshole.
No, that's what he's like. He's like, there's an old guy down on the next float. He's got some.
Oh, nice.
That's what he tells me, right? So I just look. And I see, like, the old guy. And the old guy, of course, is like, he's like, I'm not wearing a stupid mask anymore, right? He's just riding bareheaded. Because they also, folks, if you don't know, like, a lot of the riders in some of the creepier parades wear these, like, flesh-colored, faceless masks.
Looks like an S&M thing, like a primitive, like, sort of...
Yeah. Eyes wide shut.
Yeah, exactly. Like weird, yeah, exactly. Very right. Yeah, ritualistic.
Yeah, yeah, it's strange, yeah. Right? But this guy's like, I'm old. I'm not wearing it anymore. And I figured that's got to be the guy right there.
Yeah,
the kid. So I went after him, man. And I was like, dude, DeBloon. He was like, thank you. He was so appreciative next generation was like, dude.
Sure.
And he was Mr. DeBloon, man. He was like, yes, here. And he just gave me a big handful of doubloons, man. And I was like, God, that's
folks,
the guy.
I wish we got to do video soon because Jeff's pantomiming of that person.
The excitement.
The excitement. The pantomiming was off the charts funny.
But it also is something that is easy to forget. Like I had someone that was visiting from out of town this weekend and had never been here. And so it's easy, you know, once you're around Mardi Gras a bunch, to realize that out of context, it's really hard to digest. Like all that, like there's these guys that look like KKK guys, you know, and
right.
And there's, you know, black Flambeau that, you know, and lots
of talk about that,
vestiges of, you know, basically old, but, you know, a much older time. But so it's and not that it's particularly malicious now, and like, you know, chances, you know, I don't even know if the KKK like is referencing these old crews. I think there might be another explanation, but you just look at it. It doesn't matter what the history is. It's just like today you stand on the street like, whoa, fuck, that's pretty heavy.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's not that any of the stuff is necessarily malicious today, but, you know, that's where it comes from. You know, like this, it comes from a time where there was a very different social structure. There was a lot of, you know,
but yet the pretty, same structure pretty, still happening on the parade though, isn't it?
Well, I'm certainly not the Mardi Gras historian. I'm sure you can get some better folks for that, but the flambeaux, you know, are basically, again, for the listeners at home, are almost always black folks that carry a propane tank on their back and what looks like an old-timey like flash rig for a camera, except instead of the flash, it's got three little spouts of flames coming out fed by the propane, and that is ceremonial now, but once upon a time the night parades were only illuminated by these guys with the propane tanks, by the, you know, gas lanterns. So that tradition still stands. They could make, you know, I just read a piece where they it was pre-electricity, and the flambeaux, they threw a strike. They refused to parade because they wanted to get,
yes,
they were getting paid $2.50 and they wanted five.
Sure.
To march 7 to 9 miles, you know.
How long ago was this?
Yesterday, yeah.
Last week.
It's in the Advocate.
Before Carnival. Yeah.
Well, then one of the other kind of two things I have to add to that is that one of the other kind of vestigial aspects of that, which has died off somewhat, but if, you know, you run into somebody like me and I'm like, ah, man, this is what you do, you know, and people look at me like I'm crazy over by the Circle Bar, and I'm like, you know, you toss out like some quarters, you know.
Sure.
You throw change at these.
So that's
at
also,
the flambeaux guys.
That's also right. A tradition, because what they
scramble on the ground to get it. It's really sad, man.
All right. So going, just circling back to my point, which is
it is, but you, the guys that really hustle like walk away with like $70.
And that's
that's really sad.
And that's always been the tradition.
The guys are really, they're running around like fucking rats chasing a crumb, man.
Basically there was, with, you know, in the beginning they were so grossly underpaid that those guys started to like dance and perform on the parade route, which they were absolutely not allowed to do, but did it anyway. And that's when the tipping money, you know,
started kick in, right?
Yeah, now it's exactly. Just a full-time tradition, but they try to figure out a way to outlaw that altogether somehow.
Well, look, let me just say this. You don't have to be a dick and toss it at the guy. Like, they will happily come over and put their hand out
on a $5 bill,
and you can fucking put some money in there.
But instead, all these fucking crackers throw the shit on the, they say, look, like the old fucking crackety cracker granddad with his grandsons, like, I'm gonna teach you a lesson right now. You got a quarter? Watch those Negroes run, man. But they're not saying Negroes.
Yeah, yeah, that happens. But then the flambeaux guy
bends. That shit's happening, bro.
That flambeaux guy bends over, and then the crotchety grandfather who brought his illegal ladder onto the route, you know, the kid that's on top of it winds up getting his face burned. You know, so there's some measure of revenge in there.
There's happy accidents.
Yeah, yeah, there's happy accidents that happen. But I wanted to say another thing is that some of them insist on also still using the drip can as the way of fueling those things, man, which goes way the fuck back, man.
That's called an artisan.
Yeah,
right.
It's called an artisan?
Artisan, craftsperson.
Oh, okay. All right. but that was the old school before the propane.
They featured them in DIY magazine.
There's like
lives in a blue plate law.
No, that was a feature kind of in DIY magazine.
Oh, yeah, really?
Okay. Yeah, okay, the ones who do the traditional
stuff. Who make it,
yeah.
So, I mean, what I'm just saying in general is if you airdrop someone on the ground right in Mardi Gras that's never been here,
like an alien
that is, you know, from the Northeast or from some other part of the U.S. and familiar with U.S. politics, it can be jarring.
Well, and that's what I want to say about the drip can ones, because the fuel will like drip out of the fucking of where the actual the bow of the flam is at, right where the flame is, and it will create like a rivulets of fire that are coming down that seem really dangerous. They could be dripping onto the shoulders of these guys that are carrying this stuff.
My whole thing is to, like, whenever there's stuff like this, and just in general, like, what would an advanced, intelligent alien life form think if you just drop them in and, you know, screw somebody from the Northeast or whatever? But, like, what would an alien think if they just came in and what? They'd be like, oh, those are the masters, those are the slaves, and the women are subservient. If you went to one of these parades, that's all I'm saying.
You would get some...
And I'm a snowflake.
You would get... Yeah, and they'd be like, what are all these people right here? And they're like, oh, those are the fools.
Right.
They're picking up plastic things and value.
Oh, yes, that's on the side.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we're the fools.
Exactly. Right. And they're going to be like, where is the king who's, like, making money off all of this?
He's on the float. He's the king. Anyway, what else were we going to say about it?
So you were saying your favorite
Carnival, favorite parade.
So that's cool. I've never seen
Mid City.
Mid City. I want to check that out sometime. For me, I do always love Crew de Vue. It's the beginning. It's the first real parade. So it's kind of you get into the spirit. My all time favorite is Toth.
Really?
Yeah. Favorite.
Oh yeah. Interesting.
That's not one that you get on typical
gigantic up, gigantic uptown daytime parade.
I live uptown.
Is that this Saturday?
That is the
Saturday before Mardi Gras.
Yeah, that is the Sunday before Mardi Gras. Yeah, it's Bacchus Sunday. Yeah, gotcha. Daytime. Yeah. I love that for a number of reasons. It's in my neighborhood. It starts way uptown. I think it goes by a couple of retirement homes and stuff, and goes basically starts at Audubon Park and goes all the way down Magazine.
It's the parade that starts the furthest uptown.
Yeah.
That one in Okeanos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like it because I've just had a lot of good memories associated with it. It's very convenient. It's my favorite day. It also is connected to my probably first memory. First experience in New Orleans, so that's instant nostalgia.
Was Mardi Gras your first time here?
First time I came to New Orleans was Mardi Gras.
Wow, that's awesome.
It was nice. It was trial by fire.
Sure was.
Yeah, it was very, because I was, so we're talking about all these things, if you don't know, folks at home, that was me. I certainly did not know any of this. I had very little understanding. So my girlfriend, Jen, who went to Tulane and who's old friends with Joel and friends with everyone here. Lived here for a long stretch of time. And when we started dating, she really wanted to go down to New Orleans with me. And so we went to Mardi Gras and I was like...
She knows everything.
Very kind of. Dialed in. Yeah. Yeah, has a lot of, writes about music, so has a lot of info. And so the first time I was like, yeah, that's great. It'd be our first trip together as a couple. So I'm excited. And then afterwards, I'm the only thing I know about Mardi Gras is late night Girls Gone Wild infomercials at that point,
right.
Because that's what gets exported. That's the only thing that escapes really.
This is great. This is great. I'm loving this, man.
And so afterwards, I kind of double taked and was hey, we're not going to throw up on Bourbon Street and pour, drinks over it.
Yeah, after you guys decided to make the trip.
I was excited at first, I just had to double check it was because I had no idea. I really had no idea, and so then, she assured me that it was nothing like that, and it really wasn't anything like that, and so yeah, my first time was getting off in New Orleans, getting off a plane, going to a friend's house uptown for an hour, enough to get my suitcase on the ground, a costume on, and then get in a party bus to go to Mom's Ball.
Holy which was shit.
So I was at Mom's
off
Ball
the plane to Mom's Ball, dude.
Wow.
Couple hours later.
Dude.
And I will say this, I will say this,
amazing, dude.
Respectfully, that was many years ago, and I do have a general time goes by, people change, but it was people were partying hard. And it may have just, I think in general, post-Katrina, there was a period where people were there was just, at least my experience for the little friend group I was around, people were, just taking bigger license at that point. And then eventually, you know, most of it all kind of like subsided and went back to normal. And some of that may just be life experiences, like people got older and stopped, you know, changed their behaviors and stuff. But at that particular point in time, it was like, wow, like, this is heavy duty. So I had a blast. I mean, there wasn't any like horror story about it, but that was the first. So party bus, mom's ball, you know, off my face, out all night, get back to the friend's place that we were crashing at like 6 a.m, you know, lights up, you know, drink some champagne, get a, like hang out in the living room for like an hour or two, like whatever, 2 hours, and then get up like, come on, we're missing it, and run down to Bonton on Magazine and see Mardi Gras Indians practicing in the back of Bonton, which they do every Sunday before Toth.
Yeah.
And this is, so I have no context. So I'm like, my skull is being peeled back right at this point.
Sure.
Where I'm like, wow, this is a very special place. And so that whole memory, that whole first time is like locked in. So Toth is always, is going to be my favorite probably, or in the top three forever, you know. So
right.
It's such an incredible experience.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody understands what it's like, the pressure to go on a trip with your new girlfriend for the first time, or the first time you go on a trip with your girlfriend, for it to be dropped into mom's ball in the middle of carnival.
Holy mom's ball shit. with 15 other people who I interacted with for like almost like a 24-hour cycle, but had no idea who they were because everyone's masked and everyone's on in like Mardi Gras mode. So, you know, and I, you know, tread lightly, but that person, like, you know, then I, like down the road, is like, oh, that's like, you know, a well-established, you know, very, you know, awesome person, you know, that
successful
was just
chef
just
or
party, right. You know, it's partying around. And and so, yeah, it was actually for the first handful of years. Even the place I rent now, I rent from someone who was on that bus. Wow. Who I had no idea, but it was total coincidence that we just showed up on the front porch from a Craigslist ad, and she was like, I know you, you know?
That's great.
So we're all to the small town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
God, what a great story.
I know, it's great. We're at about 52 minutes right now, I want to say. So do we want to take a little break here?
What do you think? A little quick break, and we'll come back and wrap a little bit more about Carnival, get a little bit more into favorite parade since they're upcoming, because both of you surprised me so far, and that's I'm gonna try and check out both, and then we'll get into a few other things.
Okay, see you then, folks.